Hello, we're here for another Strewn Along the Path. This time we have something that was strewn along the path of our superhero marathon spectacular. I had recorded some things and didn't get to them because of, for different reasons, things went longer than I thought they would. So I had less days to fill, which was good for the marathon. And then I also was able to see Man of Steel, so I wanted to talk about that on the marathon as well. And so I had to kind of pick and choose what I wanted to bump off the list, and this is another story that I wrote, and I explain it as we go, so let's just get into it. All right, and today I'm going to go back to some of my old writing, and for a while there, I was participating in a website called writing.com. Writing.com is kind of a cool website. It's kind of good. You can put your stories on there and people can read them and review them. And you can get involved in reading other people's things as well. And they have, you know, straight up stories, straight up document kind of things. Or they have interactive, kind of like choose your own adventure things that you can add on to, or you can start your own, or you know, whatever you want to do with that. And they also have what they call these campfire creatives, which is basically a multi-writer story where somebody starts up a premise or somebody starts the story, and then you come in as a character of that story and write your point of view, and you kind of build this story together. And so, you know, it's creative, and there's lots of good things that you can read on there and participate in. And I enjoyed writing on it. One of the things that I noticed, however, as I did more and more of that, was that a lot of it wasn't serious writing. A lot of it was just writing for the enjoyment and writing to be part of a community, which is worthwhile. It has its own merits to just get the creative juices flowing and to just write. And, you know, if you're serious about writing, you can just post your stories and people can review them and tell you what they think and different things. But it just became more and more apparent as I participated in that, you know, it wasn't for somebody that was trying to get published. It was more for just somebody to go there and write and to have fun and collaborate with other writers and enjoy that. And I did enjoy it. I had a lot of fun doing it. But I kind of realized that, hey, you know, if I want to be serious about writing and I want to start submitting stories, this probably isn't the site where I need to be spending my time. I need to just be writing stories and submitting them. And, you know, I did do that for a while as well. But I still look back on the writing that I did with the writing.com stuff that with fondness. You know, I enjoyed doing that. I liked a lot of the characters and a lot of the scenarios that I came up with. So I thought I'd share a little bit from that with you today. There was a story or a campfire creative kind of thing that I started, and I had this whole premise of this, you know, superhero people gaining superpowers, and I kind of controlled two of the main characters in that. And other people came in with their characters. And, you know, it kind of becomes like a role-playing game, which is a lot of fun, too. You know, so you kind of create your own character. And there's rules for these campfire creatives of, you know, everybody has to, you have to provide this information about your character. And what are their powers? And what can they do? If it's a superhero type one, which is what I'm going to be reading from today. That's why I'm kind of setting it up that way. You know, I was involved in a couple Star Wars ones. I was involved in a couple X-Men ones. And, you know, a couple other ones that I started. And so, you know, like I said, it's a lot of fun. But, you know, it's not the most serious writing that you might do. But some of this, I got serious about it. And even if other people were just writing frivolous things or just trying to make it about you know, hooking up in relationships and just kind of more immature type writing, I still tried to take it seriously and do the best I could with the characters that I had created. And in this case, you know, this Campfire Creative was started by somebody else. The whole premise was the former students like Wolverine and Storm and Jean Grey and those and Beast and those type of characters, they become the instructors at the school. They, you know, so it's kind of old school X-Men with a little bit of New Mutants or whatever. I don't know what you want to call it, but that was kind of the premise. And so I wanted to create a mutant character that was different. You know, it wasn't super laser guy or, you know, somebody that could fly or teleport or do something. I wanted to do something kind of unique and different and maybe unexpected with a mutant. You know, if I was going to sit down and write my mutant story, well, I guess Mutant Force back from high school, I guess, was my original mutant story. But if I was going to have a mutant character and I was going to create my own comic book, what would I want in a character? And so that's what I set out, and I tried to take it seriously. And again, this is fairly old. I can't remember how long ago it was. And I've learned a lot since writing this. And so I'm a little bit embarrassed in some of the writing because it's, you know, it's some of it's pretty simplistic. But I did try to take it seriously at the time, and I did try to have fun with it. But I was a younger writer then, and not that I'm a great writer now, but I've learned a lot since then. So anyway, that being said is kind of a caveat. And the other thing is that's going to be kind of hard to read some of this is that there's other things going on between what I'm going to read, which is my own writing other people's things and a lot of things that other people wrote. One of the things that the creator of this shared story, I guess, you know, they did want some romance involved and some, you know, characters having relationships and exploring those kinds of things as mutant students in this school of X-Men kind of thing. And so, you know, I did get involved because I was supposed to, you know, that's what the creator of the shared story wanted to explore. So I did some of the relationship stuff that I probably wouldn't have done if I was writing on my own. And so maybe that was good for me to step out of my comfort zone a little bit, but also I just kind of hate the, you know, the high schoolish type relationship, you know, the immature. I tried to make it a little more mature, and I did step out of my comfort zone in that regards, as you'll probably see, maybe some of the things you wouldn't expect. Teaser. So anyway, I'm just going to kind of give you the rundown and the history of my characters I created. So, I guess just kind of the history. So his name is Braxton, and his mother died when he was 4 years old, and his dad raised him as an only child. But his father was involved with this secret militia type organization, and they eventually moved to this compound, not like a white supremacist, but more like a mankind supremacist against mutants. And they called themselves the Man Militia. And they were in upstate New York, and they were kind of an extremist mutant-hating group, is how I pronounced it here. And so, but when Braxton was growing up, he was kind of oblivious to all that thing. He didn't know that they were against mutants and setting up this militia. He just made friends with people in the compound. It was just kind of a happy life for him growing up, being naive and not aware of all this stuff. He didn't understand the hatred that his father had for mutants and the intention and activities hidden behind what was going on. But when he was 12, his father brought him to one of the secret meetings where they had some mutant prisoners, and they planned to kill him, essentially. That was what they did. And before the executions, as one of the initiation rituals, Braxton and other young men were thrown in with the mutants and to basically to have a violent bad experience with mutants, because these mutants that they had held had been tortured and pretty much conditioned to where they hated humans and would just attack humans that they encountered. And so the initiates of the compound, you know, when the young men were old enough, they threw him into this situation with these mutants. But they had developed mutant restraints or ways to stop mutant abilities, and so that their children wouldn't be killed, but they would have a bad experience, and they might get hurt by these mutants, and this would foster the hatred. And I was just trying to look for ways to, to dig into that prejudice against mutants and take it to an extreme level. And so anyway, when the mutants, of course, his father didn't realize that he himself was a mutant. And I think I might have been thinking that there was some history behind his mother, and possibly she was a mutant, and people had killed her because of that, but they didn't think that Braxton was a mutant, or I don't know if that's what I was thinking or whatever. I probably would have developed that later if this was a character that I was gonna write a novel about or something. But so anyway, when the mutants began to attack Braxton, his own mutant power kicked in and caused havoc. Now, Braxton's power had eventually, his code name becomes Backlash, and so his mutant ability, or his power, is essentially he has the ability to counteract other mutants' powers. So he's kind of impervious to other mutants' powers and attacks on him. This power that he has, this Backlash power, can be unpredictable. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know how he's going to react to other mutants' ability. And it depends on how it's being used against him and all that kind of thing. It also depends on how much Braxton is trying to control it. But his mutant powers, they naturally act to the presence of and actions of other mutants. And Backlash really doesn't have any control over what his power does or how it affects people, how it reacts to other mutants. But he has kind of learned to rein it in since, not at this point in the origin story, but later on, he learns to kind of rein in this power so that it doesn't affect other mutants when he doesn't want to. He pretty much just leaves it on all the time because he doesn't know what's going to happen. As a side effect of this power, he can detect and sense the presence of other mutants. I wrote down here that it was within a 25-foot radius. And his Backlash powers don't always react the same way. For example, if Backlash was attacked by Cyclops, Backlash may deflect the energy beam that Cyclops sends at him, or he might absorb it, or he might redirect it, or he might just simply be protected from it. So there's various ways that these Backlash powers can either protect Braxton or, turn against the mutants themselves. But it has to be against their mutant ability. Like Wolverine has claws. Well, Braxton's mutant ability isn't going to do anything about his claws because that's not part of his mutant ability. So it just depends on who's attacking him and how they're attacking him and what their powers are and what his Backlash powers decide to do with that. It's just kind of an automatic reaction that he has. And so, I thought that was different. I thought that was something I hadn't seen in comic books before. So this Backlash power, the first time it ever reacts, of course, it never had an opportunity because he hadn't been around mutants. But now that his father and these other men have stuck him in this arena or whatever with these mutants that are going to attack him, he reacts. His mutant ability kicks in and reacts to these other mutants. So it causes havoc with them. It unintentionally enables them to break free of their restraints and to escape. There's a fierce battle, and many mutants and many members of the Man Militia that are killed, and several mutants escape, and several of them form into a group that they call the Mutant Militia. So you have the Man Militia, and now you have the Mutant Militia, this group of mutants that has escaped. So both Braxton and his dad survive this, and other militiamen as well. But now that his dad knows that he's a mutant, his father tries to kill him. Braxton kind of gets away from him, and then the mutant militia attacks the compound, and his father is killed in that attack. And Braxton survives again because of his abilities, and he's invited to join the mutant militia, and was kind of even celebrated among them as their liberator. And so Braxton stayed on with them for a while, and he learned how to restrict his ability, like I said. But he didn't really care for their vengeful goals against mankind. He didn't like the mutant militia either. And so eventually he left. I guess the way I kind of looked at Braxton was that he was kind of conflicted. He kind of shared some of the dislike of mutants that his father and the other man had had. Some of that carried on. Even though he was a mutant himself, he was a little bit, mutants to him were trouble because then his power kicked in whenever he was around mutants. And so he pretty much tried to live a solitary life away from mutants or the conflict between humans and mutants or anything like that. And so he kind of became a drifter and he made friends with people as he went. And so kind of where the story kicks in. So that's kind of the background of Braxton. Backlash, if you will. I guess his first experience with more mutants comes when he's found his way to Kansas. And I guess now thinking about Man of Steel, after talking about Man of Steel, I guess Kansas is the place, to be for superheroes. But he's in a small town called Clover, and this is kind of when Braxton is explaining his backstory. He goes to the X-Men compound and he meets a girl named Tina. She kind of says, "Oh, what are you doing here?" And he says he's looking for Logan. So as they're going to the X-Men mansion or whatever, he's kind of explaining his previous experience. So I'll just read here a little bit. He had found work with a local farmer who gave him room, board, and a modest wage. The Palmers were very nice people who had made him feel like part of their family, and after a while they had stopped asking him questions about his past. He loved the manual labor and the rustic living. In some ways, it reminded him of his life on the compound, at least the life he remembered before he knew the truth. He had been in Clover for almost a year, the longest he had stayed anywhere since he discovered his abilities. That's because he hadn't run up into any mutants. Not until that day. Braxton went into town to pick up a few supplies. As he was getting in his truck to leave, he felt that very familiar but unwanted sensation. Not again, he thought. No more mutants. He looked around and spotted a short, stocky man across the street wearing a flannel shirt and smoking a cigar. Braxton knew this was a mutant. The stranger wasn't looking at Braxton, but instead was watching the Granger family, especially their little girl, Emily. The Grangers had recently moved there from Vermont and bought some land down the road from the Palmer's farm. Braxton left as soon as he could, determined not to get involved. "It's none of my business. Every time I get involved with mutants, something goes wrong and I have to leave. I've got it made here in Clover. I can't blow it." However, all Braxton could think about that evening was that a little girl was in danger. He had to do something. So he decided to at least visit the Grangers and warn them about the stranger that he had seen. As he approached the house, he sensed the mutant. Braxton turned around just in time to receive a blow to his head, knocking him unconscious. When he came to, he was laying in the same place, in front of the house. He sensed the mutant was still on the premises, but he couldn't place where. Then he heard a little girl's scream from the barn. Braxton rushed over to where he could peek in through a slit in the door. He saw Emily cowering near a pile of hay. He turned to view her attacker, but he was surprised not to see the stout mutant he had seen in town, but instead a large man wearing a nice suit. He was approaching the girl with a shotgun. "You've been a liability for too long, little miss." He pumped the shotgun, loading the shells, and Emily cried out in horror. "I have to do something," he thought. Braxton crashed through the door to charge the man. At the same time, he saw something spring down from the rafters. He heard metal ring as if swords were being unsheathed, and then he saw the attacker's gun fall in pieces to the ground. He looked up to see the mutant stranger pinning the large man against a post. The mutant had long blades like claws protruding from his wrists, with one of them pressed to the man's throat. The mutant turned to Braxton and said, "Get the girl away from here." His tone did not invite questions. Braxton went to the sobbing child and picked her up in his arms. He brought her to the house and tended to the bruise on her forehead. He found her parents bound and gagged in their bedrooms and untied them so they could reunite with their daughter. Later, he returned to the barn to find the man in the suit dead. When the cops arrived, he told them everything he knew, except for anything about mutants. Apparently, Emily had witnessed a murder in Vermont, and the Grangers came to Clover to escape the killer. So much for that idea. Although Braxton spoke of another person involved in Emily's rescue, he was viewed as the local hero. He did not appreciate the extra attention. Somebody might suspect something. And somebody did. A couple days later, when Braxton was out building a fence, he sensed the mutant again and saw him standing near a tree smoking a cigar.
"What's your story, bub?" the mutant asked.
"Not much to tell, really," Braxton said sheepishly. The mutant moved closer, poking his finger at Braxton. "Look, kid. I saw you eyeing me in town the other day. What were you doing at the barn that night?" Braxton backed away. "Please, don't threaten me."
"Why not?"
"Well, you're a mutant, and I..."
"Got a problem with mutants, bub?"
The mutant extended three claws from his right hand and approached menacingly. Suddenly, he stopped and fell to his knees, grabbing at his ears and screaming. Braxton noticed that blood was protruding from the mutant's hands where his claws had emerged. Braxton closed his eyes and concentrated on pulling in the effects of his powers. When he felt they had been contained, he opened his eyes and viewed the stranger. The mutant was getting up slowly. His hand had stopped bleeding and looked perfectly healed.
"How about that?" the mutant mused. "You're a mutant too, aren't you? You really sent my heightened senses for a loop."
"Now, look, I don't want any trouble. Just leave me alone, please. I just want to be like everyone else. Nobody needs to know." The mutant didn't say anything right away. He stood there sizing Braxton up and seemed to be weighing some kind of decision. After a charged silence, the mutant smiled.
"Hey, look, kid, I like you. I'm not looking to ruffle any feathers here. Your secret is safe with me."
He leaned closer.
"But let me give you a little clue, kid. You are a mutant. You will never be like everybody else."
Braxton didn't know what to say. He was grateful but troubled. The mutant pulled a card from his wallet and handed it to Brandon.
"My name's Logan," he said. "If you are ever looking for someone to help, this is where you can find me."
"Thanks," Braxton said, and he meant it.
"See you around, kid."
Logan walked away through the field. So, of course, that was Wolverine that he met. So that's after that experience with Logan. Braxton thought about it for a while, and then he decided to go visit him, basically at the X-Men mansion. And so when he gets there, you know, he meets this Tina and kind of gets to be friends with her, and she introduces him to other people. And, you know, he tells her her backstory as they're going to the mansion, like I said. And then Wolverine shows up and he meets Wolverine, but he's there to get everybody rounded up because they need to go. There's a crazed mutant in New York causing havoc in the streets or whatever. And so they need to go help with this mutant situation. And so Braxton gets pulled along kind of hesitantly. He almost doesn't go because, all these mutants that he's around, it makes him uncomfortable. And now they're going to go and get another mutant that's going crazy or whatever. So he doesn't know if he's going to go, but he finally makes a decision to go. And Logan says, basically, "Good, because you're my secret weapon. I couldn't control the story. I just gave my little bit. And then somebody else took over and they told what was happening from their character's point of view. And they told the rest of the story. So, I didn't necessarily get to have Braxton do what I wanted him to do all the time." But eventually they go get this other mutant and they bring him back. Then, you can tell Tina likes him and she wants to get closer to him and stuff, and he kind of pushes her away because he's still not sure how he feels about all this, all being around all these mutants, and especially having a relationship with one. So the next part I wanted to read to you is when he first encounters somebody that he knows from the mutant militia. So I'll start reading here again where I come in. Braxton watched as Tina walked away in wolf form. He thought about calling her back, but he didn't. He felt somewhat of a kindred spirit with her. There was also something about her that intrigued him. He was reminded of Sydney's flirting. He had hesitated to respond to her, but should he have been more open? Worrying about girls was always so frustrating. Braxton had avoided the issue for years by telling himself he couldn't get involved with anyone because he was a mutant. Was that wrong? No. He was right to be protective. His first relationship had proved that. Braxton sensed a mutant nearby. He looked around but didn't see anyone. Tina, is that you? Who's Tina? Came a voice in front of him. Braxton recognized the voice, and before he could say anything, a smiling face, only a smile, and a pair of green cat-like eyes appeared before him. Cheshire, what are you doing here? Braxton asked, dismayed. Cheshire was a member of the mutant militia, which Braxton had left many years ago. Cheshire could make things invisible, including parts of his body. He also had the mutant ability of persuasion and charisma, being able to charm people into doing whatever he wanted. However, it had never worked on Braxton, who found him to be very annoying. That's what I like about you, Braxy. You're never happy to see me. So who is Tina? A girlfriend? How will I ever tell Cassie? She'll be crushed. Cheshire fully appeared in front of Braxton. He stood about 7 feet tall, wore a blue militia uniform, and had blonde hair surrounding his head, face, and neck to form a lion's mane effect. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't plan on rejoining the militia, and leave Cassie out of it. Okay, okay, said Cheshire, holding up his hands. So what are you doing here, Cheshire? Well, as you know, we are always looking for new recruits. We have learned that this school is a mutant training center, so what a better place to enlist? I never dreamt I'd see you around a place like this. I thought you were on a quest to disappear into a mutant-free life experience. So what are you doing here? To be honest, I'm not sure. I met someone who I trusted that led me here. This Tina, is that who you trust? Asked Cheshire, leering. Braxton sighed. No, it's nothing like that. Look, Cheshire, I don't know much about this place, but I can tell you that you're wasting your time. The people here are not interested in your militia. They are looking for peaceful solutions, not retaliating against mankind. Don't be so sure, Braxy. I've already found a couple of interested parties. Who? Sorry, Braxy. I know you don't want to get involved in mutant matters. Go stick your head in the sand. Cheshire disappeared, except for his eyes and mouth. I'll give your best to Cassie. He gave Braxton a wide smile and disappeared completely. Braxton waited until he felt Cheshire's presence go away. Then he headed toward the mansion. He needed to warn Logan, and maybe this Professor X, about Cheshire recruiting for the mutant militia on campus. It could only lead to trouble. And so here I kind of brought part of his backstory into it. And, you know, I was trying to create my own thing here, even in the midst of, you know, sharing this story with all these other writers and people with their own agendas and whatever. So it was kind of hard, but, you know, I always tried to steer it toward this mutant militia, and I kind of hoped other people would grab onto that and carry on. Eventually some of them did, but, you know, some people were kind of oblivious doing their own thing. So it's kind of hard in these situations. But anyway, I eventually get Braxton to go talk to Professor X, and there's kind of another thing going on with this mutant that they brought back, Trice, I think his name is. You know, he's caused some problems. He kind of has a bad attitude, and he's gotten a fight with some of the other students, and you know, Braxton's kind of gotten in the middle of that on his way to see Professor X. But eventually, like I said, I was able to get Braxton in a room and kind of warn Professor X about things, and other people were concerned about other things going on. You know, it was kind of neat because some of the people caught on, and they kind of wrote their part of the story, kind of including that they had been influenced by Cheshire, and that they were thinking about maybe we do need to go against Mankind. You know, the Cheshire had been working on them, and they started to think that way. So that was kind of neat that I was able to kind of get that into people's minds, and they went with it a little bit. What point do I want to pick up? Oh, well, I guess to explain, so he does talk to Professor X, but Professor X is kind of worried about other things, and kind of brushes off Braxton's warnings, and so he's not very happy about that. So that's where we come in here. So here we go. Professor X's words still rung in Braxton's head. "I assure you that we are taking all the necessary precautions against them, and that you have been a big help." What a patronizing idiot, Braxton thought. This professor was totally overrated. Precautions my foot. Cheshire told Braxton he already had some interested recruits, and the professor didn't even know that Cheshire had been on campus. Well, Braxton had done his part, he figured. He had warned them. He had come to visit Logan because he was intrigued by the thought that someone might be able to help him, but now he wondered if this school of mutants was just full of itself. Maybe it was time for him to move on, go back to Kansas or someplace else. He was kind of disappointed. He had been beginning to hope that there was a place for him in the world, a place where he could be of use. He was even enjoying feeling part of the group and getting to know some of the students. Oddly, he thought of Tina. Just then, he felt the presence of another mutant. He had hoped to sneak away without being noticed. The mutant approached and spoke.
"Long time no see, Brax. Cheshire said you would be here, but I didn't believe him."
Braxton knew that voice as well. It was Cassie. So now I'm bringing in the old girlfriend kind of thing. So that was interested. Again, you know, everybody was trying to put their own spin on the story, and I kind of wanted to go a certain direction. They even had me interacting with other characters in the story, but I found a way around that, and I'll read that part next here. But essentially, Braxton goes with Cassie, and they leave the school to talk things out or whatever. It's not really explained. And, you know, because I wanted to get to that point, I kind of jumped from where Cassie first came to meet him, and then I jumped to this next point in the story. And this is why I couldn't just read the whole story for this. I had to kind of break it up and explain it as we went along. But this is probably my favorite part of what I wrote in the story, and it's a little bit more out of my comfort zone to write about some of these things. But I really like how this scene plays out. So, Braxton woke up on a hard mattress and stiff sheets. But when he felt the softness next to him, he remembered where he had spent the night and with whom. He turned his head slightly to see Cassie curled up next to him in the hotel bed, still asleep. Her pale face was squished up in the pillow, causing her to make an awkward yet strangely still attractive expression. Cassie's brilliant white hair was matted around her head and partially covered her eyes. It then flowed over her shoulders and under the covers. Braxton rolled back over. For the first time in his life, he felt like he could do anything. Braxton and Cassie had talked late into the night in each other's arms about their future. She wanted to leave the mutant militia and run away with him. In fact, she was quite emphatic about it. They didn't need the militia or the X-Men, just each other. Sure, it sounded sappy, but that's how he felt.
What are you smiling about? Cassie asked.
I don't know. You, I guess.
It's nice to see you smile again.
She edged over and kissed him. Braxton looked into her green eyes.
Are you still up for this?
With you?
More than ever,
Cassie replied, while standing to enter the bathroom. Braxton stood and stopped her, wrapping his arms around her slender frame. You know, Cassie, leaving you was the hardest thing I've ever done. But I couldn't stay with the militia.
Cassie looked up to meet his gaze. And I couldn't leave. I nearly died as I watched you walk away.
Braxton hesitated, not wanting to get into old arguments.
So, what's changed?
He felt her shoulders droop, and she looked at the floor.
They just have, Brax.
Then she looked up at Braxton, pleading.
Let's just go away, okay?
Yeah, okay, let's go, you're right. Braxton turned away to grab his clothes. He struggled to keep the frustration and doubt from rising to the surface. All the mysteries were still there.
Brax,
Cassie called from the bathroom door. He turned back.
I'm not going anywhere, she said with a smile.
Suddenly, the main door burst open.
Housekeeping!
Came a gleeful cry from Cheshire as he entered the room, pointing a rifle directly at Braxton. Braxton chided himself for leaving his guard down. He had held back his power to be close to Cassie. Now, as he paid more attention, he could sense three other mutants besides Cassie and himself.
Cassie, get out of the bathroom! He yelled. There is someone in there!
Cassie came quickly to his side. Braxton handed her some sheets so that she could cover herself. Cheshire just laughed heartily.
Ooh, what a sight! You two look perfectly ridiculous. I literally caught you with your pants down.
What do you want, Cheshire? Braxton said indignantly.
You, dear boy. We were very surprised to find you with the X-Geeks. And we don't want you interfering with our plans. So, you had to be contained.
Cheshire turned his head to the side, but kept his eyes and the rifle pointed at the captured pair.
You can come in now, Flashbang. You too, Radar.
A Hispanic woman came in behind Cheshire, wearing a red uniform and a blue bandana slash mask tied around the top of her head, her long raven hair flowing from behind, and she had slits cut for her eyes. A man came out from the bathroom. He was short, wore sunglasses, camouflage pants, a t-shirt, and a flak jacket. He chuckled mischievously as he passed Braxton and Cassie to join his companions.
I see you've got some new recruits, said Braxton.
Well, we had to find someone to replace Gunner after what you did to him. Cheshire's voice became bitter.
I warned him not to attack me, Braxton replied quietly.
Cheshire continued. Radar here is a living tracking and surveillance system, while Flashbang can effect some major damage. And then there's Cassie, who you are quite familiar with. His malevolent laugh returned, earning him playful grins from his cohorts.
Dang, girl! When you are given an assignment to distract someone, you don't hold back.
I must commend you for your dedication. Braxton quickly turned to Cassie. She looked as if she'd just been kicked. She looked up pitifully into Braxton's eyes.
It's not like that, she pleaded. I used the assignment as an opportunity to...
Yes, yes, interrupted Cheshire. We heard all about your plans to run away together. How pitifully romantic. But you knew we couldn't let that happen. We just let you entertain each other for a while we attended to other items.
Now, the question is, what to do with you? You can let us go, Braxton suggested.
and let you interfere with our business with the ex-geeks?
We won't. We just want to go.
What about Tina?
Braxton was silent.
Yes, that's right. We have business with your other girlfriend, too.
Now it was Braxton's turn to face Cassie's eyes.
It's not like that, he told her.
Then he turned to Cheshire.
But she is a friend. What are you going to do with her?
Well, there seems to be a theme developing. She's about to run away with you as well.
Braxton was confused at first, but then he remembered.
Twin?
Very smart, Braxy, Cheshire leered. Twin had quite an interesting conversation with Tina last night. Of course, she thought she was talking to you. What is it that makes these women want to run away with you?
Well, he ended up disappointing her, but I directed him to reconsider and round her up this morning.
I won't let that happen, said Braxton.
What are you going to do about it, tough guy?
Your backlash powers can't do anything against these bullets.
Cheshire sneered at Cassie with a smug smile.
And I know Cassie won't risk using her powers.
Braxton looked at Cassie. What does he mean by that?
Cassie didn't answer, but looked at Cheshire with barely contained rage.
Braxton stepped toward Cheshire.
I don't need mutant powers to obliterate that smile from your face, you dirtbag.
Bring it on, Braxy. I've been waiting for this.
The two were locked in bitter stares.
Then Braxton abruptly dropped to one knee and swept his leg under Cheshire's to bring him down. If the others came at him, Braxton could use their powers against them. Cheshire did fall, but he twisted his arm to point the rifle directly at Braxton's chest. Cheshire smiled and pulled the trigger.
No!
Cassie screamed. A brilliant white light enveloped all of Braxton's senses.
So yeah, I like that scene. Everything I wanted to do with these characters kind of came together in that scene. And I really like the way it came together still to this day. Hopefully you got some enjoyment out of that as well. I did go on for a little bit longer in the campfire, but eventually I stopped contributing to it. And it was, a lot of people were stopping at that point anyway. But I did have a big fight scene where eventually that the Trice character went out of control again and everybody had to go confront him. And I did write kind of a third person thing where Storm and Wolverine and one of the other guys took care of him. But I did have Braxton out of commission for a while. There was a healer character with healing powers. And so I had Jean Grey and this healer come and basically heal Braxton from being shot in his chest and brought him back. And I kind of had them accusing Cassie of being a part of everything. And they were kind of suspicious of Cassie and wanted to know what her intentions were and how did she fit in with all of this. And, you know, Cassie, of course, was distraught because Braxton had been shot and she didn't know if he'd survive. And I brought to light that, you know, Cassie's powers are teleportation, but Cheshire had infused her blood with kind of nano explosives so that if she teleported and used her mutant ability, she'd pretty much be killed. But she felt guilty because she wasn't willing to sacrifice herself for Braxton, and he ended up getting shot and killed, at least as she thought. But he was, of course, going to be healed. I was kind of happy that the character, the person that was writing for Tina, went with what I set up with Twin, that he was kind of luring her out and causing her problems. And so she wrote about that, how she thought it was Braxton, but then realized that it wasn't. But again, I think the story kind of faltered at this point, and it didn't continue much past this. And so I'm not going to read the rest of what I wrote. I guess if you're interested, you can email me or say something on the forums. I can send you everything that I wrote for that, along with the other people's stuff as well, if you're interested. But anyway, that it was kind of fun to be a part of that. And I was going to read from another shared story that I started up, but it would be really hard to do that. I would pretty much have to rewrite it from scratch, you know, writing everybody's part and writing the other characters in. It was just too hard to try to break out what I had written and make a cohesive story out of it. And plus, I've already shared several things and time's running out on this marathon, and I don't have time to put it all together anyway. It's a lot of work to do these marathons. But I did want to share the story of Backlash and Braxton and the mutant militia and all this stuff. And, you know, it is tied in with the X-Men, but I tried to make it my own story and, you know, bring these different elements in. And there was challenges with that in a shared world, shared story kind of thing. Like I've said too often, probably. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that and enjoyed kind of the creative process of my other mutant story. So you've heard two of my mutant stories, and you've heard me talk a lot about Spider-Man and Batman, or Superman and Batman. But I'll talk to you again tomorrow. Strewn Along the Path is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Feel free to share it, but do not change it or sell it. The theme music, as always, is brought to you by Man in Space.